everybody. This is William Del Pilar. This is Points on the Board, and I am here with my bud, El Matador del El Salvador, Eddie Aparicio. How you doing, brother?
What's up, brother? How you doing, man? We got to come up with something new. The man, something from Panama. I don't know. We got to figure something out, man.
Off screen, Eddie was talking about my hair. I was telling Eddie, maybe we'll come up with something like that. I come from a family on my Puerto Ricano side where they have their heads are still full of hair, and they live into their 90s. And you know me, Eddie. I'm a political demon, and I keep telling the wife, you know, I'm kind of glad I'm closer to death than life, man. We got a nasty-looking world coming up ahead.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
You know, but every generation says that, though. Every generation says that. You know, I would say that back in our day, our parents probably used to say the same thing, you know, because all the wars.
No, you're right. You're right.
Yeah.
No, you're right. You're right, Eddie. But here's the difference. Every generation before us has not been this technologically ahead. And it has completely changed the way our life. And here's an ugly fact. History books do not like to talk about, and I studied this and learned it. Once a country, the people who created that country or formed that country, once they stop reproducing, when they start reproducing less than the outsiders that come in, the country's eventually doomed. And there has not been one time in history where it's been positive. Eventually, that whole civilization crumbles away. People don't understand, by the end of the Roman Empire, they weren't even fielding their own armies. They were pure-blood mercenaries. And that was one reason why the Visigoths and the Germanic tribes were able to invade. You know, so history is replete with all of these ugly truths, for lack of a better way. And that's why, you know, I'm looking at this country, because I love this country. I mean, this country, Eddie, my family in Panama, you Americans don't know what the hell poor is until you go to a third world country. But if it wasn't for America, my mom's family in Panama would still be beyond dirt poor, but she was able, because of America, to send money back. And my aunt got her master's and has been a teacher for decades now, you know. And they, even though they still live in the barrio, their home's one of the better homes in the barrio. You know, it's like when I go to the barrio, I can't go walking around on my own because I stick out. But they all, by the time I finish my stay there, they're like, oh, el americano blanquito está aquí, you know. The little whitey Americans here visiting us, you know, because I'm the only, you know, I stick out in there. But it's a blast, and I love going back to Panama, you know. You ever gone back to El Salvador? You ever gone to El Salvador?
You know, it's only when I was like maybe 6 or 7 years old. 6 or 7 years old is the last time I was there. It's a long time ago. I have family over there. I just don't know them, you know. I have quite a few family members. I just never really met them. So, yeah. So, no idea.
What are you, second or third generation? Are you second or third generation?
I'm first generation here in the U.S.
Meaning, were your parents here? Okay, so your parents were immigrants.
Correct.
So that's a little odd. Usually the first generation is closer to the roots of their Latino side. So your parents made sure to integrate you nice and proper, which is a goal amongst a lot of immigrant parents. They want their kids to become Americans, learn English, get the education, et cetera, et cetera. My parents were too busy working to mind us. We were all over the place. Anyway, we got a great show today, people. We're going to talk some basketball, as always. Eddie is our insider here with some great insights. And we are going to talk – I'm looking for my notes here, Eddie. We're going to talk Pascal – how do you say that? Siakam or Siakam?
Siakam.
Siakam.
Pascal Siakam.
We're going to talk about that trade. We're going to talk about rest in peace, Mr. Dejan Milojevic. And we're going to talk about some trade rumors. Eddie's going to fill us in. And then we're going to talk some National Football League. The head coaching hunt is ongoing. And what I found funny, Eddie, about that is the repeat names for the interviews, especially a lot of the black coaches because of the Rooney Rule. And I feel bad for those guys because how many times does a black man go into an NFL head coach interview knowing He's just there to fulfill the Rooney Rule. And it's good and bad, and we'll talk about it, and I'll tell you why it's good and bad. But then we're going to talk about the divisional round of the playoffs, and I know Eddie was sweating bullets. I know you were sweating bullets over there. Green Bay outplayed him. But this was a bigger victory for the Niners for a few reasons, and we'll talk about that then. But let's get to it, Mr. Eddie. Talk to me about this trade. Pascal Siakam, is that – oh, yeah, I screwed that up again, didn't I?
Pascal Siakam. So
– Siakam. What is that?
Yes. Pascal – he's from – I believe he's Nigerian. I believe he's from Africa. I think it's either – I think it's Nigerian is where he's from. So So
I don't believe him because I have not received an email saying he needs $250 million.
No, okay.
You don't get it. Remember the early days of the internet. You'd read, I am – okay.
I get it. No, I get it.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No worries. So, you know, the NBA trade deadline is coming up here February 8th, and there's been a couple of trades that have happened, and namely only from one particular team. It's the Toronto Raptors, who, you know, started the whole movement with the movement of OG Anunoby to the New York Knicks. And then, you know, it was well known that Pascal Siakam was probably next on the trading block because, you know, the Masai Ujiri is the GM over at Toronto, and he is definitely trying to stockpile draft picks and rebuild his team, and he's good at it. So, you know, with the trade that they accomplished with the New York Knicks, they did get a second round pick. But with the Pascal Siakam trade, Siakam went to the Indiana Pacers, and it was actually a 3-team deal. The third team wasn't really, you know, broadcasted much, but it was between the Indiana Pacers and the Toronto Raptors, and the third team was the New Orleans Pelicans. So what happened is that Pascal Siakam now goes to the Indiana Pacers, and then the Indiana Pacers, they get Bruce Brown. The Raptors get Bruce Brown, Jordan Nwora, and then and Kyra Lewis. And Kyra Lewis is the player that came from the New Orleans Pelicans. So they flipped, the New Orleans Pelicans flipped it to the Raptors in exchange for a second round pick. So the Pelicans get a second round pick, Indiana gets Pascal Siakam, and the Raptors get Bruce Brown, Jordan Nwora, and Kyra Lewis, along with three first round picks. So two of those of the three first round picks are in 2024, and then there's one in 2026. So the reason why this trade happened is because Indiana, you know, they were one of the teams that I picked in the very outset in the preseason as one of the teams I think could be competing, not necessarily for a title, but a team that's going to be a problem. They're the number one rated offensive team in the NBA, and they've had sustained a few injuries here and there. Tyrese Halliburton, who's their point guard, just came back from an injury. He was out for a couple of weeks with a hamstring strain. But the team is a very offensive-oriented team, and they need some defense. And, you know, they already have a defensive guy in Miles Turner, who's their center. They lost Bruce Brown, you know, a couple years ago when they traded him to the Denver Nuggets, and he was a very defensive-minded guy. But since then, they haven't really had that defensive presence. So Pascal Siakam is a really good two-way player, two-way meaning both offense and defense. So he kind of helps balance, you know, this offensive-oriented team and brings back some defensive-mindedness to help, you know, Miles Turner on the defensive front. So now the Pacers have a balanced team. They have Tyrese Halliburton, who's a point guard, a very, very good point guard. Then you have Pascal Siakam, who's going to be probably playing, like, the power forward spot. And then you have Miles Turner, who's the center. And then you have two other players, Buddy Hield, who's an outside shooting shooting guard, and then you have Aaron Nesmith, who's a small forward, kind of defensive-minded guy as well. So they have a pretty good team here, and they have a pretty deep team, so they have a bunch of other players that they can come off the bench. I mean, this was a move in order to improve their chance because they're right now sitting at the sixth seed in the East, along with the best offensive team. They can move up the ranks. You know, I mean, the top three teams in the East, you know, are pretty much established. They're essentially going to be Boston Celtics, the Milwaukee Bucks, and the Philadelphia 76ers. And I don't know if you saw it tonight, but Joel Embiid scored 70 points tonight, by the way. I don't know if you know that, but that's ridiculous.
Holy mackerel.
He scored 70 points tonight. And then you have a Karl Anthony Towns who's scoring 60 points. So it's like a big scoring night tonight. But anyway, wow. So getting back to this trade, so this is the reason why they did it. They wanted to be a little bit more balanced. And the Raptors, you know, they're a team that's in rebuild, although their team is doing better than people thought. They have a superstar, I don't want to say a superstar player, but a very good player in Scottie Barnes. And they made the trade with New York Knicks to get Emmanuel Quickley and R.J. Barrett, who both have been playing pretty well for that team. And then you have, you know, Gary Trent and Jakob Poeltl to round up their starting lineup. But they have a couple guys coming off the bench, Dennis Schroeder and as well as Bruce Brown, the aforementioned Bruce Brown. And I think, in my opinion, Bruce Brown is going to be moved. You know, we can talk about that later in the podcast about the trade deadline rumors that are coming up. So Bruce Brown's name is definitely floating around there.
So I do have a question on Pascal. So, you know, my big shtick in sports and what separates champions from never made it or they make it and they lose is leadership. This guy's a two-time All-Star, won an NBA title in 2019, 8 years with the Raptors. Yep. Is he going to bring leadership to the team and helping them mature and grow? I mean, sometimes they may not always say it in print. The journalists are too dumb to understand. But sometimes some of these trades are also dumb because he has that leadership intangible. Is he that type of player or is he, I don't want to say follower, but is he somebody where they need an already established leader? Or can he help lead?
I think he's one of these lead by example types. You know, he's not one of these vocal leader types. You know, I mean, he can be that, but that's not his natural tendency or his personality. I would probably put him in the same cloth as maybe like a Stephen Curry. You know, lead by example, right? You know, a good person, good locker room guy. You know, and people kind of follow his lead, but he's not one of these boisterous guys that's going to try to rally the guys to do what they need to do. He's just not, he's not that type of guy. You know, he has the championship. So, you know, he has that to add to his credentials. He's a two-time All-Star, All-NBA. So, you know, he's got the credentials to get, you know, people to listen to him. So if he speaks, I'm sure people are going to listen, but he's just not one of these boisterous type of guys that's just going to, you know, make sure everybody's aligned, you know, like a Draymond Green, if you will, right? He's not like that.
Right. And the reason I ask is, if I remember correctly, Indiana's never won a championship in our lifetime that I know of. I think the closest they got was with Reggie Miller or maybe the Bird era, you know. Yep. It was just interesting in the sense that they're always in a rebuild or on the verge trying to make it happen for Indiana and the fans. So the trade also sent Bruce Brown is and Jordan Nwora to Toronto.
Yes.
Is that right? Okay. Now those guys had their own championship rings. So who out of this trade do you think got the better deal, or is it a trade that's going to benefit both teams? What's your take?
Well, I mean,
kind of grade would you give it? Is what I'm asking.
Well, yeah, the Pacers are in a win soon. I don't want to say win now, but win soon. They're trying to, move up the ranks in the East. They have a dangerous team. They have a very deep team, and I think this is a move before another move, in my opinion. I don't know if it'll happen by the end of this year or sometime next year, but they're definitely building a strong, young, contending team in Indiana. So it depends on what you want, because Toronto Raptors are not trying to win now. They're trying to stockpile picks and get a bunch of tradable assets, to build a team for later. So, if you're grading on the team on, now and the return on the investment now, I would say it's the Pacers. But for later, it's definitely the Raptors.
So, in a sense, they both got what they wanted. And just like I always say at the draft, when people try to give draft grades, I'm like, we're not going to know until at least 3 years from now,
Yeah. If you want me to give you a grade, I'll give a B plus to the Pacers. And I'll probably give like a B to the Raptors. That would be my first inclination.
Okay. There you go. Yeah. And we'll revisit this trade in 5 years. How's that? No, I'm kidding.
There you go. Exactly.
That's the sad thing about all trades is everybody wants to give them a grade, but we'll never know until years later. Okay.
Right.
So good luck to both the Raptors and the Pacers. And at the end of the day, I'll be honest, I just want to see – other teams rise up to the challenge and join the ranks of the Lakers and dynasties like that, because I think it's good for basketball. Because I do think one reason basketball has struggled is there's not, it's Well, you can't compete with football, but football has got the parity. There's like, you know, a team can dominate for X amount of times, but there's always other teams. Basketball does not seem to have that as much, but I could be wrong. Anyway, speaking of basketball and your team, Golden State, Eddie, there was some bad news last week on that. Dejan Milosevic passed away. And all you heard was Golden State coach, Golden State coach. But he was also a player, wasn't he, Eddie?
Yeah, but he wasn't in the NBA. He played in Europe, and, you know, he was a coach in Europe as well. And then he also was a well-known coach for some players, you know, that are currently in the NBA. You know, he definitely had a big influence and impact in Nikola Jokic's career. So he's the one who helped him develop his big man skills, if you will, when he first was drafted by the Denver Nuggets. So, you know, Nikola Jokic and Dejan Milojevic, they're good friends, and this definitely impacted Nikola very, very much, as well as a lot of players in the NBA. You know, this guy's one of these good guys, you know, always a smile on their face, very likable, lovable person, you know, just kind of lights up the room whenever he goes. And this is a big loss, not only for the Warriors, but the NBA. And, you know, this happened actually on the night of the Warriors were having a dinner, you know, a team dinner, which, you know, 75% of the team and coaches were present at this dinner. And Dejan Milojevic had some kind of cardiac event. And, of course, you know, the emergency came, took him, you know, to the hospital, you know, did what they could to save him, but they couldn't. And he, you know, he's succumbed to, you know, the event on Wednesday morning. And the Warriors were planning to play against the Utah Jazz that Wednesday, the 17th, and the league essentially just, you know, postponed that game, and then went ahead and postponed the subsequent game against the Dallas Mavericks on the 19th, the last Friday. So the Warriors haven't played since, you know, the 15th, Monday the 15th, when they lost to the Memphis Grizzlies, and they haven't played since the 15th, and their next game is coming up on the 24th, which is this Wednesday. So, you know, the team has gone through a lot. You know, anytime you see something like that, especially someone that you're close to, it's going to shake you up. It's a very traumatic experience for everybody. A lot of counseling, a lot of, you know, tears, a lot of, you know, just recovery from the team. They're a team that, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how this plays out, what's going to happen. Because, you know, this team is already kind of struggling as it was. And, you know, it wasn't clear as to what the reasons were. I mean, there were some locker room grumblings that, you know, some of the young bucks were kind of not really feeling, you know, being on the team with these vets who just didn't necessarily, they felt like they weren't really given the credit that, you know, that they were due, because, you know, they are contributing, you know. And then you have the Draymond Green issue, you know, with being suspended and definitely came back to the team. And, you know, I'm sure he lost a little bit of his voice. You know, then you have Chris Paul who got hurt. You know, they're just kind of like in a transition period. And, you know, they're in this win now mode right now because they have Stephen Curry, who's still at his peak. You know, he's probably on the downside of his peak, you know, of his prime, but he's still a very, very well-known, well-known player, well-rounded player, one of the best, I would say top five players in the NBA still at his ripe age of 35. It might even be 36 or pretty close to it, but you know, they're in a win now. They have a salary cap. You know, their salary cap is, you know, they're paying luxury tax, you know, and Lacob isn't having it. You know, he doesn't want to pay all this money for a team that's doing this bad. They're four games under 500.
Right.
So it's going to be interesting to see what happens here. You know, are they going to rally around this guy? Which is possible. I mean, you know, Steve Kerr was, you know, there was a beat reporter that was reporting that, you know, Steve Kerr was, you know, this is something that's uncharted, you know, territory for him. You know, how do you deal with something like this? And, you know, he actually had, you know, sought some advice from one of his senior, you know, coaches, Ron Adams. And, you know, Ron Adams pretty much told Steve Kerr, hey, you know, what do you think that Dejan would want you to do? And Steve Kerr kind of pondered, and he's like, you know, he kind of laughed. He's like, you know, he probably tells you mother effers, get on the court because you got to win some games, right? So get out there and just win some games. So, right. You know, that's what they're going to try and rally around. You know, they have, you know, they still don't know how they're going to honor him. They, you know, I know that they're going to do some kind of a T-shirt, you know, league-wide, you know, when they play again on Wednesday. So, you know, we'll see. This team's a veteran team. They could rally around this thing. or they can crumble. And, you know, something like this could rally, you know, anytime you have a traumatic event, it usually can, it can galvanize a group of people. And in this case, a group of teammates that, you know, were in shambles, and maybe this, this helps them kind of recover. We shall see, but it's going to be interesting what happens. And, you know, rest in peace, Dejan Milojevic. You know, thanks for all your contributions to the league. And you're definitely going to be sorely missed. And my condolences to you and your family, you know, to the Milojevic
team. No, it is devastating. It is devastating. And, you know, it was a heart attack in his 40s. And obviously with the COVID vaccine, everybody's asking questions. But at the end of the day, don't forget, it's a family who's suffering. Friends are suffering. So it's a tough thing. I've got a folder here of all these people who are dying. Myocarditis, you know, I'm up to like 400, 500 just from like 3 or 4 months. So hopefully his death can help I don't want to say help, but, you know, as you were saying, what would he do? Hey, go out there and win, you know. It doesn't get the team down too much, and it helps push them forward. And the thing, too, is in death, sometimes you learn about yourself and you realize things, you know. I just had a friend who helped us start one of our podcasts pass away less than a week ago. And it was stunning because she's younger than me, you know. And so you just – and he – in fact, she was about his age. And you just don't expect people to die at that age, you know, especially from a heart attack. You know, you think car accident or something like that. So it can be scary, and you never take life for granted. And, you know, he was here living the American dream, making god-awful tons of money, doing what he loved. So I'm happy for that, and I hope his family's taken care of. And God bless him, his family, and rest in peace. You know, to Dejan Milojevic, rest in peace. All right, Eddie, let's move on here and let's talk some trade deadline rumors. What are you hearing? February 8th is the deadline. You just talked to us about one trade. There's been other trades going down. Have you heard anything about any big names being moved here in the next week or so?
I would say that not necessarily the big names, but, you know, I the way I'd like to handle it, I mean, last week I talked about some names that could, you know, they're popping up, you know, but, you know, the other thing is that there's some expiring contracts that are very attractive to, in order to make a trade. And some of these names I did not mention last week, but some of these names that I'll mention, Miles Bridges of the Charlotte Hornets is an expiring contract. I already mentioned the aforementioned Bruce Brown. He's a very attractive player for teams that are trying to get over the hump, that are trying to vie for, you know, a championship or just being, you know, a really good team in the playoffs. Bogdan Bogdanovich is another player in Atlanta. Atlanta is in this weird situation where they have a few names on their team popping up because they're just having a disappointing season and they haven't necessarily figured it out. You know, they have Trae Young, DeJounte Murray is another one, and then Bogdan Bogdanovich. I mean, Clint Capella was another one I mentioned last week. I mean, these are four really good players on the Atlanta Hawks. And, you know, they're being mentioned as guys that are going to be probably dealt, you know, in the trade deadline coming up. You have another guy like Zach LaVine, who I've already mentioned in the past. The Chicago Bulls are another team that are kind of a disappointment. They have all of this stockpile of talent that just haven't really put it together. DeMar DeRozan, Zach LaVine, Nikola Vucevic. You know, they had Lonzo Ball, but he's been hurt. So, you know, they're in a mode where they're trying to maybe retool, you know, and you know, these players that they have, they're all different. They could be difference makers for a team like, you know, the Los Angeles Lakers, like the Dallas Mavericks, like the Orlando Magic, you know, like the New York Knicks. These are all teams that, the reason I mentioned these four teams, because I think these are the four teams that are definitely going to do a deal in the trade deadline coming up. And then the reason why is because the New York Knicks and the Orlando Magic, they're more defensive-minded teams, right? And they need some offensive punch. And some of these players that I mentioned, Zach LaVine, Miles Bridges, Bogdan Bogdanovich, Terry Rozier is another one from Charlotte. All these guys are offensive-oriented guys that can score the ball. And teams that need that scoring punch, that are very defensive-minded, they value that. They want that. They need it, right? As long as they can play some form of defense. You know, we found this out with the James Harden. Right. You know, James Harden isn't a defensive-minded guy, but he's a very offensive-minded guy. And he went to a very defensive-minded team in the Los Angeles Clippers. As long as he can get by and do, like, you know, what he needs to do from a defensive assignment standpoint and not necessarily excel but do decently at it, that's a great addition to the team. And James Harden's proven that, you know, you can do that, even for a guy who's not very defensive-minded. So if some of these other guys that are very offensive-minded could join, like, the Orlando Magic or the New York Knicks and become, you know, integrated into their system and provide that scoring punch that team sorely needs. So the other teams in the West that I would say are probably going to be active are the Dallas Mavericks for sure. I mean, that team is playing very, very well. And you know, they had the vision of having, you know, two scoring big scoring punch guys in Kyrie Irving and Luka Doncic mm-hmm. to be, you know, these scoring forces, and they just surround a bunch of, you know, that those guys with a bunch of shooters. You know, they can always add another player like that. You know, Zach LaVine, I think, would be a great fit over there. They've been inquiring about a Kyle Kuzma who plays for the Washington Wizards. Kyle Kuzma is one of those offensive-oriented guys who can shoot the ball, big guy, big, tall, 6'10" guy. You know, he would be a great addition to the Dallas Mavericks. And then you go into the Lakers. Lakers are one of these teams that have been kind of up and down. They've been, you know, kind of down for a while. Then they started kind of finding the footing, and then they started doing well again. So they're kind of hovering around 500, like a game above 500 or so forth. But I think because their point guard depth is in question, you know, they have D'Angelo Russell, you know, who is their point guard, but then you have LeBron James, who's probably the backup point guard. He's not really a true point guard, but he can play it. But then the guy that they had on the team, Gabe Vincent, who came from the Miami Heat, he's been hurt. So they're in the market for getting a good point guard to help complement that team. And guys like DeJounte Murray and Terry Rozier, who are both point guards, those are names that I think have been popping up on the Lakers, you know, radar. They just have to figure out a way to make it work. They're probably going to have to involve other teams to bring these, you know, players together. But, you know, these are four teams that I picked out: the Orlando Magic, New York Knicks, Los Angeles Lakers, and Dallas Mavericks, that I think are going to be pretty busy during the trade deadline figuring out how to retool the roster and make them even more formidable in the playoffs.
Eddie, so just for the audience, especially with basketball rules, they're so much different, and they're very soft. They're not hard rules at times. So when you're talking about expiring contract, what you're saying is the player's going to become a free agent and the team wants to get something out of it before that happens. What I found when I was doing my research on all this a couple of weeks ago and reading up on it, the first thing I started to realize was what you said, that a lot of teams that seem to be disappointing, for lack of a better word, it's like they're looking to shed themselves of these big contracts, you know? And I just found it ironic. So I can see why basketball has so many more trades than the NFL. Well, for one reason, they have a soft cap. I mean, technically, it may not be a soft cap, but for all intents and purposes, in reality, it really is compared to the NFL. But it's fun to see that. And the only downside of free agency is, remember, as a kid, and this was not good for the players, so I'm not advocating to go back to this, but, I mean, you get that one player on that one team for 10, 12 years, you know, his whole career. Right. Poor guy wasn't earning anything, though, under that system. But that's the downside I see with sports today, with all these free agents trades. But nobody cares, because at the end of the day, they're going to remember a handful of players and just remember that the Lakers were champs one year, Miami was champ this year, Boston this year, that year. So I guess in the end it doesn't matter, but keep us in the loop on that. One final, just give me your quick 30-second take on it. I didn't put it in our notes to discuss, but the Knicks are riding a pretty good win. I don't want to say winning streak. They may have lost, but they're in a positive win column here the last dozen games or so. I've never seen the Knicks win a championship in my lifetime. How close are they?
To win a championship, you know, they're definitely not a title contending team this year. I think that, you know, they're a formidable team that could create some problems for some teams that are not ready, like the Niners you saw against the Packers, where they almost lost. They can be that kind of team in the NBA where they can kind of take somebody out who's maybe sleeping at the wheel a little bit, right? They're definitely a playoff contending team. I would put them probably around the fifth or sixth best team in the East, in that range, especially now that they, you know, got OG Anunoby on their team. It's definitely helped their team quite a bit. And, you know, they're going to be in the market of trying to get somebody else to beef up the offensive side on that team, because defensively they're one of the top defensive rated teams in the NBA. along with the Orlando Magic, along with the Boston Celtics, along with the Milwaukee Bucks. You know, these guys are in that conversation as far as defensive minded teams, and they're going to be an issue. But as far as title contending, I don't see that yet. Could they get there? Yeah, maybe with the, maybe a couple draft picks and maybe a big trade. Then maybe in the next 2 to 3 years. But right now, I wouldn't say they're title contending. They're right. They're definitely a formidable team in that, that could cause problems in the playoffs.
I just remember as a little king, if I remember correctly, I always marveled at Bernard King and the Afros back in that era, and then seeing them fly through the air. And like Dr. J, he was always one of my favorites. And I remember him and Pete Maravich, because of the comics, believe it or not. They were big advertisers in the back of the comics. I can't remember what they were advertising, but Pete Maravich and Dr. J, you know. So, well, hopefully, because, you know, for the NBA, it's just the Lakers in Chicago, but not even Chicago the last 10 years. But, you know, you need those big cities that have quality teams for your ultimate success from a business standpoint. All righty. All right, and there we have it. There's our basketball take. We talked the trade. We talked the death of an individual, as well as trade rumors. Eddie's here every week to keep us in the loop. And we shall talk more trade rumors next week, and we'll see what's happening around the league. But let's move on to the football, to the National Football League. We didn't talk about this last week, and there have been a few coaching hires since we talked about it a couple weeks ago. The NFL head coaching hire. To remind the audience, the Falcons fired Arthur Smith. The Panthers fired Frank Reich. The Raiders fired Josh McDaniels. The last two were fired in season. The Chargers fired Brandon Staley. Titans, surprisingly, fired Mike Vrabel. They should have kept him and traded him. Ron Rivera was fired by the Commanders, and they said it was a mutual parting in New England. But no, Bill Belichick was fired. I can't stand it when teams sugarcoat something like that. No, he was fired. They didn't want him back. And same thing with Pete Carroll. Pete Carroll is whining. That's all he's doing is whining. This is a guy who destroyed the USC Trojan a football program, and then left and got rewarded. I don't like Pete Carroll. That's just a bad human being. You know, you don't destroy a program, leave the players hanging who've committed before the transfer portal's around, make your millions and go, oh, hell, man, they're gonna start putting all kinds of things. I'm out of here. And that's what he did, you know. Not a good dude. So I'm not glad he got fired, but I'm not shedding any tears, you know. And I was wondering about Pete Carroll. I'm like, dude, you're 71, 72. It's not like you're Bill Belichick. You know, you haven't gone to the playoffs in about 10 years now, you know, or the Super Bowl. So I wasn't stunned. So let's talk to Atlanta Falcons. I'm sorry, Eddie.
No, I was going to say, they've been to a Super Bowl, I think, maybe, what, 10 years ago? In that range, or maybe less than that, 7 years.
Yeah, Russell Wilson. It was
Russell Wilson against the Denver Broncos.
Russell Wilson, and
Yep.
And they destroyed the Broncos. I knew that game was going to go the way it did. Yeah. So let's all head on to the some of these teams who have let their coaches go and where they stand. So the Atlanta Falcons, Bill Belichick, obviously the former Patriots head coach. We're not going to hit every player that's interviewed for every team. There's just too many players. Some teams have already interviewed 10 candidates. It's just the papers don't report on it, but the data's out there. But Bill Belichick has had a second interview, former Patriots head coach. A snag has come up, and they're saying it's pretty much his job, but he has issues with the CEO, Rich McKay. And per a lot of the journalists out there, and they're correct. They're saying he may not want to report to Rich McKay. And if I'm Arthur Blank, I listen to why he was let go. I go talk to Kraft and find out. But the bottom line is Bill Belichick is no longer the head coach of the New England Patriots because Bill Belichick, the general manager, failed at his job. Bill Belichick, the general manager, got Bill Belichick, the head coach, fired. Again, I don't care what the paper said. He was fired. Kraft did not want him back. So, without Tom Brady, you hear me every week, he's a loser. His record's like, what, 29-48? It's terrible, but he's a loser. Other candidates, Jim Harbaugh, Ben Johnson is a hot candidate for the Detroit Lions, and Ejiro Evero, the Panthers defensive coordinator. And the reason I brought him up is that was pretty much the only bright spot of the Panthers at times, was they had a solid enough defense. The defensive coordinator for the Ravens is also being interviewed. Mike McDonald, legit. You saw that defense. The one that that's and Raheem Morris. I feel bad for Raheem Morris. Look, he did not. He's not a good head coach. His record states that. I'm referring to his record. But I feel bad for him, man. He's black, so he's being interviewed by all these teams, you know? And it's like, you know, I hope he's being given a legit shot in these interviews, you know? It just seems unfair. But he's a Rams defensive coordinator. Antonio Pierce was interviewed, but that's a typo on my part. I should have removed him because we know he's been hired already. And Steve Wilks, the 49ers defensive coordinator, who was an interim head coach for the Carolina Panthers last year after I can't even remember who got fired. He's in the college ranks now, Nebraska or Oklahoma, one of those teams. He's actually your boy now. He's the defensive coordinator for the Niners, and right. He's a pretty smart guy. And the reason I say that is that defense was struggling. He acquiesced to making changes. He played, was a team player, and it paid off for the defense. So having a head coach that's not stubborn, I think, is key to being successful. So that's Atlanta Falcons. The whole point with all this is it's going to rest on Bill Belichick if he can work with McKay. Do you think Bill Belichick, without a quarterback now, we saw him in Cleveland without a great quarterback. We saw him in the Peyton New England without a great quarterback. Now he's going to go to Atlanta with no great quarterback. If he does, I think his losing continues. Now I'm biased. I don't want to influence you, but do you think Bill Belichick would be a good hire for the Falcons?
It depends on whether or not, if he's just going to be a head coach, then yes. But if he's given full reign, then no.
Yeah, that's my take. I don't know why he would. I guess my issue is, why do you want to go to Atlanta, Bill? You're 71. That program is still 2 to 3 years away from even thinking about competing seriously. That's the weakest division. Even though they were in the division hunt, it just seems you want the record. I think Don Shula, you know, whoever has the most wins, and I think he just wants to stick around for that. So I see losing continuing wherever Belichick goes, unless he goes to a team with an established starting quarterback. The Carolina Panthers. There's nothing to talk about here, Eddie. They're still in the interview process. Dave Canales, the Buccaneers offensive coordinator, Hiro Evero again, Ben Johnson, again, the hot coaching candidate, Mike McDonald, the Ravens defensive coordinator, and Todd Monken, the Ravens offensive coordinator. Look, I don't care what I have to do. If I'm the Ravens, I will pay the man the world to keep him in Baltimore because he's only been in Baltimore 1 year. And that's a setback for Lamar if he leaves after this year. So I hope he sticks around over there and doesn't go. Again, Raheem Morris, Rams defensive coordinator. And this guy, I would not touch him with a 10-foot pole. Based on the fact of how he ended his run in Atlanta and how he ended his defensive coordinator run or his last two games in Dallas, is Dan Quinn becoming the defensive coordinator. So I don't dislike him, but I'm like, as an outsider looking in, I'm like, you know, it looks like there's better candidates, but people don't understand. I was an interpreter in the military. It was not my job. I was just very good at it, but I wasn't the best Spanish speaker. But I knew how to carry myself. I got along with all the higher ups. I knew what my role was. There was this one other guy. He was my bud, Eddie. He was your. There's a division in the military called the boatswain mate, meaning the deckhands. Like when you go to the Navy, you don't a deckhand. When you go to the Navy, you don't have a job that's designated. You're thrown into the boatswain mate's division, chipping, painting. It's the most miserable job. So one of my good friends was Latino. He was Puerto Rican. And he was your stereotypical Latino. He used to always rag on me that I wasn't Latino enough. Dude, he'd get so mad because I always got the interpreting gigs. You know, I was always, well, one of the people, I know Spanish, blah, blah, blah. And I tried to tell him, dude, clean your act up. Never did. And my point in saying this is some people interview better than others. They get along with the owner, the general manager. So it's not always the best football mind that will get the job. And I wonder where Dan Quinn, obviously Dan Quinn is an excellent defensive coordinator. I wouldn't put him as an elite defensive coordinator though. But in his defense, today's NFL is much different than it was 15, 20 years ago. all the rules have been made to benefit the offense at the defense's expense. So being a defensive coordinator is much tougher today. You know. All right. So the Carolina Panthers, we don't know where they stand. They're still in the interview process. But the Las Vegas Raiders have a new head coach, Antonio Pierce. And we were both wrong. We both thought that he would go with the big name splash. But I think there's a reason why they were forced. I read an article that validated it. You know, to the audience out there, it's too late, but they do it every year. It was 2 years in a row. Sign up for The Athletic in the holidays. Second year, they had their $1 for 12 months. I signed up for it, and I'm like, oh, my God, this is my favorite site. It's incredible. And ironically, there's about a dozen names I recognize where I used to sign that check, to cut them a check once a month, you know, in terms of reporters. But the article was very good, Eddie. It kind of said, look, he went 5-4, so it's not like his record was great, you know, 5-4. Right. But the players, he won the players over, and he won the fans over. And
Antonio Pierce,
happened.
Right?
Josh McDaniels, correct. That's what happens with a man that was so hated like Josh McDaniels. It wasn't hard for Antonio Pierce to elevate himself. The reason I say that is that one report said the Raiders were backed into a corner. They kind of had no choice. The players really wanted him, and the fans were supporting.
For sure.
With their backs against the wall, they hired him. Now, ESPN analyst Emmanuel Achos, he ripped the hire. He akened it to a substitute teacher who has all the jokes, makes some funny jokes. Everybody loves a substitute teacher until the substitute teacher becomes the permanent teacher. And there's a lot of truth to what he says, because Antonio Pierce has no coordinator experience. He's a leader of men. I get that. One of my jobs in the Navy, I did not know the job, but I could lead men. They all followed me. They understood who I was. And I was an E5, and I had two E6s below me. So when you can lead your men, they will follow. So that's extremely important. But he's going to have to start quick next year, meaning the Raiders have fired their coaches midseason. They have a history of that as well. So if he doesn't get this team off and going hot next year, it may give ownership the impetus to go, okay, we're going to cut him loose. So I hope that's not the case. But I do fear for his job because he has no quarterback. Aidan O'Connell, to me, can be a solid backup quarterback. But I don't think he's a starter in this league. So without that quarterback, I'm hoping that the Raiders can really rally and play around him because he seems to be he's a hard-nosed player. I remember him as a linebacker in his player days. He was that one guy who was straight to the point, no nonsense. Good hire or not?
I don't think it's going to be a good hire for the Raiders only because, you know, you have to do more than just be a guy that everybody likes. You know, and you know, is he an X's and O's guy? I don't know. If he hires somebody to do all that stuff and he manages it appropriately, then maybe. Right? So, but we don't know. I mean, the thing is that, you know, you got to give everybody starts somewhere, right? Everybody has to have a shot at some point if you're improving. And this guy, you know, in an interim basis, proved that, you know, he can get a team to rally for him and play hard for him. Now it's just, let's see how he does over 16 games or 17 game season now. You know, we will find out. I don't know if he's a great hire, but you know, the team likes him, the fan base likes him, and like you said, the Raider ownership was cornered to do this, and we shall see. But I think you're right. He's going to have a short hook. He's going to have, you know, he's going to have to prove that the team is going to have a winning record, you know, after 6 or 7 weeks. Because if they're below that, then I think you're right. They might move on from him midseason.
Well, here's the deal. When we were kids, Eddie, the traditional head coach hire was somebody who came from the defensive side that was a coordinator or the offensive side that was a coordinator. That's kind of been thrown out the window. However, you look at John Harbaugh, Mike Tomlin, and there's one more in the league. They're not coordinators, you know, and they've done very well. So John Harbaugh came as a special teams coach.
Right.
So, I mean, his hiring was questioned too. So history has shown Antonio Pierce can be successful. However, the Rooneys are very patient with the Steelers, you know, and it looks like the Ravens have been too with their ownership. The Raiders are not. So that, again, that's my fear. I kind of like Antonio Pierce. I like a man's man because I come from the military. I come from a Latino family where my mom was a man's man. No. My mom ruled with an iron hand. But I think that's important in today's league. So much success to Antonio Pierce. I agree with Emmanuel. I don't know if it's Acho or Acho.
Acho.
But he gives some crazy takes. But the guy, Acho, but he gets some very insightful takes, too. You may disagree with him one day and agree with him with the next day, but that's what I like about him. Okay, now the Los Angeles Chargers. Jim Harbaugh had a second interview. For those of you who don't know who Jim Harbaugh is, Michigan Wolverines head coach, national championship this past year. It took him about 4 years to rebuild that program. Remember, after 3 years, he couldn't beat Ohio State. Fire him, fire him. But now he brought him a national championship, and it wasn't even close. He has a Super Bowl appearance with the infamous Colin Kaepernick, and he lost to his brother in the Super Bowl, John Harbaugh. He's a winner wherever he goes. His first start was at UCSD, I think. Is that where your daughter's going to go, or one of the colleges, the Toreros?
San Diego State is one of the ones that she's looking at, and hopefully she gets accepted to. Yeah, well, that's one of her top four.
She will. She'll get accepted. That's San Diego State Aztecs, man. Hey, man, I can get in there. Come on, man.
No, it's a hard school to get into now, man, believe it or not. It's very popular now.
San Diego State? The Aztecs?
San Diego State, yes.
That's I was going to go there. That was where I was going to go originally. Yeah, but he was with the Toreros. I forget which. It's not San Diego State, obviously, but he was there.
Was it University of San Diego? University of San Diego.
The Toreros. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So, and what makes Harbaugh pretty good is he can adapt to the player's strength. So, for example, he had Alex Smith, used him in a certain way, and then he used Colin Kaepernick, and he did that at Michigan too. And he can get the most out of his players. His only downside is he's like me in this sense. You push so hard, you don't accept substandard work. That wears on people, and you have a shelf life wherever you go. About 25 years ago, I realized I had about a 5-year shelf life at whatever job before we got sick of one another. So he's that kind of person, you know. So I think he wants his job because, I mean, he's been here before. The weather's beautiful. And for what they're going to pay him, he can afford to live in the best neighborhoods, you know. So
right.
I kind of like him for this job. And others, you know, again, Ben Johnson. Mike McDonald, the Ravens defensive coordinator, Monken, the offensive coordinator, Raheem Morris again, Dan Quinn again, Vrabel's name was mentioned here, Steve Wilks. So the problem with the Chargers is they're cheap. They don't like to pay their head coaches. So at the end of the day, if Harbaugh does not get this job, it's going to come down to money. That's what it's going to come down to, you know. So I think Harbaugh is a leading candidate here, though. But that said, it's an attractive job in terms of San Diego itself. So they could get a big name, even if it's not Harbaugh, Vrabel, you know, a Ben Johnson. But to be quite honest, I would not mind seeing the Ravens defensive coordinator or the offensive coordinator out here as well. I'm not a big Vrabel fan because I don't know if he's willing to modernize his mentality in terms of the offense he wants. The Titans, they have a new head coach. Brian Callahan, the former Bengals offensive coordinator. Who is he the son of, Eddie? Do you know?
Yeah, the Callahan, Rich Callahan. I think he used to coach for the Raiders.
Bill Callahan. Yeah.
Bill Callahan. Yeah.
Bill Callahan.
Yeah. Bill.
Raiders. I want to say, don't quote me, but I'm pretty sure Nebraska Cornhuskers as well. In fact, he took the Raiders to the Super Bowl. He got blown out by John Gruden's Bucks in a Super Bowl. Right now, he's an offensive line. He's an offensive line coach for the Cleveland Browns. Bill Callahan is. But so Brian Callahan is a coach. 2012 to 2015, he was an assistant with Denver. Worked with Peyton Manning. He's worked with Matthew Stafford. Tim Tebow taught him. You can't look at certain players in the conventional way. You know, he's worked with Derek Carr, obviously Joe Burrows. So I don't want to say he's a quarterback guru, but he's been around enough great quarterbacks to where he understands the game, the nuances. And you can't fault – what I'm saying is he's got the resume to have been hired. So I wasn't surprised with this hire because I do know the reason Mike Vrabel was fired was because he didn't want to – I don't know if he didn't, but he had a couple of bad seasons here. But they want a more modern offense. They want that Rams style, that Bengals style offense. You know, they want that Wiz kid to come in. And they may have got it at Brian Callahan. It's a terrible fit right now because that team needs a complete rebuild to implement his offense. You know, and DeAndre Hopkins is kind of old and they're paying him a lot of money. So I think you're going to see a lot of player personnel changes this offseason. What are your thoughts on this hire? Brian Callahan, son of Bill Callahan.
You know, I can't comment too much because I don't know much about this guy. And, you know, I don't know how his system really works. And, you know, Tennessee Titans, like you said, are probably going to do an overhaul anyway. I mean, you know, you saw Derrick Henry kind of, you know, when he was getting off the field for his last game and kind of, you know, bidding, you know, adieu to the whole stadium, kind of almost acting like it's his last game. So, yeah, I mean, he's probably going to come in and whoever's going to come in and clean shop. And like you said, they have a bunch of older guys that, you know, are probably just not, you know, panning out like a DeAndre Hopkins and, you know, and Derrick right. Henry's old. So they have to retool. And they have a Tyjae Spears, who's a decent running back, but he's not an every down back. He's more of a change of pace back. They have a good tight end, Chikozim Okongwu, I think his name is. He's actually pretty good. So, you know, I think that, you know, he's an emerging person to play. And then they have the Will Levis, right? We shall see. You know, I don't think Tannehill is going to be the guy. I think that guy Will Levis is going to be the guy.
No. He's gone.
Who's gone? Tannehill?
Tannehill's gone.
Oh, yeah.
Tannehill's
gone. Yeah.
So we're not going to bring it back.
Yeah, Will Levis. So, yeah, I mean, they're going to revamp it.
So I got to ask you this, Eddie, because Ron Carthon, I think, is their general manager. Isn't he a former Niners guy?
Ooh, I don't. That name
does
not.
Come from the staff from the Niners?
I don't know. I don't know that name.
I want to say Ron Carthon. Either way, I haven't been impressed with his GM moves. And that said, I think they got the quarterback in place. Whether he can be an NFL quarterback is still unknown. Ron Carthon, that's what it is. God, we're getting old, Eddie. I remember him now. Running back for the the Indianapolis Colts. We are getting old, aren't we? But yeah, he was in San Francisco 49ers. He was hired by he was the director of pro personnel, and he was promoted to director of player personnel in 2021. In 2023, he was hired by the Titans as their general manager. And I know the fans have not been happy with some of his moves, but he gets a fresh slate here. So we'll see how that goes. I think it was a good hire. I think this guy has a proven resume. He's not a whiz kid that won a championship being an OC for 1 year. He's paid his dues, and he's worked with some great quarterbacks, and I think that will help out Will Levis. And Will Levis seems like the type of guy who wants to learn, wants to grow, isn't arrogant. So the only thing weird about him is he drinks mayonnaise. He puts mayonnaise in his coffee. Can you? Yeah, that's we Latinos, we eat some strange. We eat some strange foods, but I've never heard of that one.
I haven't either.
All right, Eddie. The Washington Commanders. They have. So I finally broke him out here because I kept seeing Raheem Morris, poor guy. So they had their second interview with the Rams defensive coordinator Raheem Morris. Eric Bieniemy got his interview. The Rams defensive coordinator again, Mike McDonald, Dan Quinn again, and Anthony Weaver. He's an assistant head coach, defensive line coach. So that's who they're looking at. But again, second interview with Raheem Morris. Now, for those of you wondering why I said I hope Raheem Morris isn't just a token interview. And the reason I'm concerned, Eddie, is because he wasn't a very good head coach. With the Buccaneers, he was 17-31. That's a 354 winning percentage. As an interim head coach with the Falcons, he was 5-7, 364 winning percentage. So what I always tell the fans out there is, having been in that game and knowing coaches and players and things like that, is you don't know squat. Just like any gig, there are things that happen every day that we don't even consider, because all we see is the product on the field. So I hope he's improved enough, matured enough. Because remember, Bill Belichick was a loser with Cleveland before New England hired him. So these coaches can do something. So I just hope the poor guy's getting a legit shot here. I'm not a big fan of Eric Bieniemy yet, only because it was his first year actually calling plays. And Eric Bieniemy needs to do what I had to do. And it's tough. That is mature. My first gig at KFFL, the startup, I was brutal to my people because I came from the military. I came from a world where failure was not accepted. You know, if you fail, you die. And Bieniemy's a bit old school. You know, it's like, it's my way, the highway. Today's players are different. But you, I think I did a paper a few years ago, many years ago, on Super Bowl head coaches. And at all the Super Bowls, there were like only one or two who could be considered players coaches that had actually won it. You know, so disciplinarians tend to be winners, and I just think Bieniemy probably needs a little bit more seasoning under a coach who isn't going to take his crap and is going to let him mature and develop as an actual offensive coordinator. For the people out there, Andy Reid called the plays, not Bieniemy. You know, so don't think he's been an offensive. No, he was only an offensive coordinator in title. You know, so Washington, we don't know where they stand right now at all. Now, New England. This was a little controversial. I'm just going to lay the story out, and I'm going to give you my opinion. Is Gerard Mayo, is he woke or not? One of the first things he came out and says, he sees race. And that was a big downer for most people, that he says that people who don't see color can't see racism. And my comment to him is, no, we all see color. What we're tired of is seeing one color get preferential treatment over another. In my lifetime, I've seen whites get the preferential treatment. I've seen my mother treated like dirt. I've seen my mother looked down upon. I've seen her crapped on. So that affected me growing up. Now I'm seeing the flip where whites are being treated like dirt and blacks are being every excuse is being made for them. That's just what I see. What gets me angry is we shouldn't be seeing it either way. And so when I saw it, I was like, oh, God. You know. However, at the end of the day, it doesn't really matter because if he doesn't win, he's gone. And all the fans care about is winning. So he can overcome the turd he stepped in by trying to make a point. And I don't like the hire, but not because of what he said, Eddie. The guy's got no experience. 2008, he was a first-round pick by the Patriots. He retired in 2015. He became the linebackers coach in 2019 and held that job until till last year. He's only 37. The team wanted him, so they must see an X factor in him, but he has no experience as a coordinator. Maybe he's the leader of men. I don't know. Again, I'm the first to admit we're on the outside. They must see something in him that we don't. But at the bottom line, at the end of the day, he's got to win. You know, so how much of a leash will they give him? Will he have a few years to rebuild? Because I think that team needs a minimum of 2 years at least before you can look at him and go, well, now you're ready to at least compete. They need at least 3 years before, okay, you can compete for a division now. So I think the team needs to give him a shot. But I have no clue what kind of coach this guy's going to be because he has no experience at that level. Even though he's been a player and a coach and a linebackers coach, doesn't mean you're going to be a good head coach. What are your thoughts?
You know, I think all these teams are looking for the next Mike Tomlin, right? The guy who just came out of nowhere and just turned a franchise into, like, a winner. Not they were already a winner, but, you know, just continue the winning. You know, yeah. And he was kind of an unknown entity, you know. So everybody's looking for, you know, the next Sean McVay, right? You know, the guys are just kind of like young bucks who know how to, you know, rally up the troops and get things going. And, you know, that's what I think this is where, you know, this is why they're probably doing is looking to find that next, you know, young, you know, inspiring coach. And they probably thought he had the makeup to be
right. There. Right. And you know what though, Eddie, the key issue here is the fact that, he has no experience. He's not a whiz kid like Sean McVay was or the guy in Cincinnati or others. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens here. And I'm going to keep my eye on this one just because of the soap opera drama that I know is going to happen. I've been involved in politics too much not to know that it's going to hit the fan in one form or another. And if he's winning, nobody will care. But if he's losing, it's going to get ugly. All right. The Seattle Seahawks, look, they're just going through their process, Eddie. Evero, the Panthers defensive coordinator. Ben Johnson, the Lions offensive coordinator. Raheem Morris again. Dan Quinn again. Now, Dan Quinn was the defensive coordinator of the Seahawks right before they went to and won the Super Bowl. And then he got the Falcons job.
Right.
So they're still in the process. And again, what I found interesting, Eddie, was Ben Johnson came up four times with interviews for four different teams. Dan Quinn, four different teams. Ejiro Evero, three teams. Jim Harbaugh, three teams. Mike McDonald, four teams. Raheem Morris, 5 teams. Steve Wilkes, twice, and Todd Monken, twice. So these are the it players, meaning that these are your future coaches of tomorrow. They may not get a job today, but they will get a job within the next 1 to 2 years, unless the teams they go back to collapse, you know, like Dan Quinn probably took a hit. Any thoughts overall before we move on in terms of the head coaches?
No, man, I think, they're still going through their processes. They, you know, it's obvious that they haven't settled on any candidates. They're trying to go through their process, the Rooney Rule process as well. And we'll see what happens, what plays out in the next couple of weeks.
Right, right, right. And you know what? I was talking to a friend of mine, I want to say 8-10 years ago, who was a black reporter, and he agreed with me. I go, look, if there's the hot candidate, if I'm the owner, I'm like, screw the Rooney Rule. I know who I want. And it had nothing to do with color as much as like Brian Daboll. Remember a couple years ago, he was a hot candidate. Every year there seems to be one. And the guy agreed with me. He goes, yeah, yeah. He goes, I feel bad for the guys going to an interview wondering, am I here as a just because of my skin color to get it out of the way, or am I legit? We talked about it for a while over a beer. And those conversations are fun when you actually are conversing to learn, to grow, and to discover. They're never fun when they're hate-filled, and I've been in those too. All right, the playoffs, Eddie. The Baltimore Ravens were just too much for the Houston Texans. Look, the Texans were riding high. There was people were saying they can compete with anybody. Enter the Ravens. On the side note, it was the most watched game on ESPN with 31.8 million people watching. Texans played well in the first half, as most people saw. Yeah. And then it was just they fell apart in the second half. I don't want to say that the Ravens were too much. They just fell apart. The Ravens made adjustments, veteran team, veteran players, and they just put the screws to C.J. Stroud. They made C.J. Stroud look like a rookie. But most importantly, the one thing I did notice in that game, Eddie, they did not contain Lamar Jackson. When he ran, there was nobody near him. So he gained 100 yards. And I'm like, that's one reason I thought they lost. I mean, Lamar Jackson was 11 for 100 yards with 2 touchdowns. That's 9.09 yards per carry. You cannot let a quarterback do that. And the one team I think that could stop him is the 49ers, but they're beat up right now. So right now I'm looking at the Ravens as the team to beat. The Texans rushing attack went MIA. People may not realize their rushing attack was helping set up their passing game, especially with the deep ball. Well, they had 2.72 yards per carry average, 38 rushing yards, Eddie. 38 rushing yards they had. So C.J. Stroud never had a chance, because without a rushing attack to keep some kind of semblance of honesty there, whether it's through a play-action pass play or just, to keep the defense honest, once that was gone, you knew the game was going to get out of hand, and that's exactly what happened. It forced the Texans to become one-dimensional. Stroud went 19 out of 33 for 175 yards, no touchdowns, no interceptions. Again, he looked like a rookie. And Eddie, I'm sure you know, they did not score an offensive point. It was their touchdown was from a punt return. The Ravens ended up rushing for 229 yards. What was your take on this game? What stuck out in this game?
Well, I mean, I it's something that I called last week, even before the game, that we were talking about the matchups. And I said that the big matchup to watch for was the Baltimore Ravens D against C.J. Stroud, because I thought that the Baltimore Ravens D was going to expose, that he's a rookie. And just like they did, not that they exposed Brock Purdy, but, they're a defense that's hard. They're a defense that's hard to read, and they're one of the top ranked, if not the top ranked defense, and they're that for a reason. They have the personnel that causes problems. They have the scheme that causes problems, and a team that has an inexperienced quarterback is going to be, they're going to be revealed, really, So I think that's essentially what happened. I think that to me, that was the key, is the Baltimore Ravens D against C.J. Stroud, or vice versa, C.J. Stroud versus the Baltimore Ravens D.
I agree, Eddie. The difference between the Browns and the Ravens is the Ravens have more than one edge rusher that can get to you because of the way the schemes are set up, whereas the Browns have Myles Garrett. And that's their whole focal point in terms. That's their stud. That's the guy who's going to get you. And it was just too much for them to overcome. You know, so the Ravens have home field advantage, and they will be hosting the Chiefs next week. We're going to talk about the Chiefs in a moment. San Francisco hangs on to beat the upstart Green Bay Packers. Talk to me. First of all, let me set it up for you. Deebo Samuel went out with a shoulder injury. The weather played a big factor. However, they persevered, I thought. And I thought that alone was a victory. Now, I'm not talking about a hollow victory, you know, these victories that don't count. I thought this was a very important game to show the Niners in their heads, hey, we can come back down. We can come back and win when we're down. Give me your takes. This is your team. You know them inside out. Talk to me, first of all, about the loss of Deebo Samuels and then Brock Purdy's struggles.
So I knew that early on when I was watching this game that the Packers looked ready to play and the Niners looked asleep. They just did not seem to be sharp. I don't know if it was that 2 week time off. I'm sure it was, or maybe they were just full of themselves. I don't know, but it was very apparent that, you know, they got the punch in the mouth and then they woke up, right? And of course the elements had something to do with it. You know, I knew anytime there's a rain, it's a neutralizer, right? It's a game changer. You just don't know. The turnovers are the big, you know, the difference maker in the game. And, you know, the turnovers, you know, unfortunately, you know, happened more on the Packers side. It could have happened on the Niners side if, you know, the Packers, you know, could intercept the ball. But if that had happened, I think it would have been a different outcome. But the Niners struggle when they don't have their full squad. They struggle in particular when they don't have Deebo Samuel. And I don't know why. That's an adjustment, I think, that Kyle Shanahan still needs to figure out, because it's very apparent that when he has his full toolbox, he knows what to do. But as soon as one of those pieces is gone, he struggles. And he's got to have some kind of contingency plan in case any of these guys get hurt. And he was scrambling to figure out how to game plan once he lost that guy. So that's my concern with these guys. I mean, the MRI x-ray show that it's nothing serious. So I think he's 50-50 right now for Sunday's game. I think he's going to play. They're probably going to inject him with a bunch of painkillers. You know, he's too much of a difference maker. This is going to the Super Bowl. This is Kyle Shanahan's legitimate real big shot to go to the Super Bowl now, even though he's been in the championship game four times in the past, what, 5-6 years. So, that's my read. I think they were flat. I think the weather has something to do with it, and they still have to figure out how to, you know, win consistently without one of their core players, namely Deebo Samuel.
You know, I agree. I thought the Niners were their own worst enemy, and they didn't wake up until the second half of the fourth quarter. You know, you know, and I was like, I knew the Packers were red hot, as I stated before, doing the power rankings. I follow each team every week, and I saw the Packers start like about week 12 and just get better and better and better. So the game itself wasn't a surprise. However, I did feel the Niners they gave up too many yards on special teams, too many drops. Sure, there was heavy rain, but you're paid to make those catches. The Packers receivers made them. The Packers receivers were getting wide open. How the hell do you not – you have the wrong cleats not once but twice, and there's two wide open TDs thrown because the Niners guy slips. You know, they let – Aaron Jones run all over them, and that's going to be – if they face the Ravens again, that's a massive handicap. Pass interference calls kept the Packers in the game. And the reason I bring all that up is to close it out from the San Francisco side is Dre Greenlaw's stupidity. You get the interception, you're the hero.
You go down.
It's pouring rain. Yeah. And he's looking for a touchdown.
Yeah.
And you know where that happened, Eddie? And the guy did fumble it? Phillip Rivers against the New England Patriots. I don't know if it was a divisional round or the championship game. But they intercepted it. The Chargers did. Had that cornerback or safety, if he had just dropped, I'll never forget, Eddie, there was the play that he fumbled. He was trying to do a move. His arms went out like this, and boom, so did the ball after he got hit. Patriots recovered. They go on to win. That's what was going through my mind as I watched Ray Greenlaw's stupidity. And I mean that.
I agree.
Sheer stupidity. That's since Pee Wee Ball, drop when he intercepted. Now they're lucky Jordan Love saved them at the end with just a bad throw to double coverage, but the Packers have done well. Look, they found a running game with Aaron Jones, who's healthy. The Packers have been loath to implement a rushing attack for over 30 years. We've seen it from Brett Favre. It's a one West Coast offense. They just don't care about a rushing attack. But that's one reason they only have two Super Bowls in 30 years, when that team should have about 5 or 6 Super Bowl rings. So the Green Bay Packers did more than they had hoped to accomplish. You Packer fans, Packer Nation, go jump in the lake if you're whining that you lost or you're not going to go get a Super Bowl. You are never destined this year, but you have more experience than any head coaching staff or a coach on that staff thought you would get this year. And Jordan Love, at least for this year, I'd like to see a couple years first before I anoint him as the next franchise quarterback. But he's on his way to becoming that. Now, the Niners face the number 3 seed, the Lions. And that brings us to Detroit. Detroit outlasted upstart Tampa Bay Bucks. Look, the Tampa Bay Bucks were playing with house money. It was a tight game until the fourth quarter. The Lions just made more big plays at the end. Baker Mayfield threw a critical interception with the 1:35 left. It's just a bad throw. He went 26 for 41 for 349 yards, 3 touchdowns and 2 interceptions. Only one interception was his fault. However, that one interception that was his fault is what ended the game with 1:35 left. Look, the Bucs defense fell apart in the fourth quarter, and I think the key play in that game, Eddie, was wide receiver Amon-Ra St. Brown's 9-yard TD with 31-17 with 6:22. Even though the Bucs came back and made it a one-score game and made it tight, once it was that 14-point lead. That put the pressure and the stress, and that's what created mistakes, and I think that's what kind of ended the game. Goff was efficient. One thing I noticed about Goff, Eddie, when he doesn't throw interceptions, they win. When he throws an interception, all hats are off, because he tends to be streaky. It's not like he has a one interception game, or even the one interception games. You look back at the games and you're like, dude, you're lucky it wasn't a 3 interception game. It just mentally he gets into a funk once he turns the ball over, and they didn't. The rushing attack did start off slow, only 114 yards, but they managed to pound it at the end. What was your thought on this game? It was exciting at the end.
It was a great game. I thought it was really good up until Baker Mayfield started throwing those turnovers. I wasn't surprised that Tampa Bay gave him this good of a game up until the end. Tampa Bay, as you know, is my third favorite team. I was definitely pulling for Tampa Bay. The Lions are an X factor. I mean, they have very, very good offensive skill players. They're deep in that. They have, arguably one of the top 3 tight ends in the NFL as a rookie, Sam Laporta, arguably one of the top 5 wide receivers in the NFL, and Amon-Ra St. Brown. Then you probably could say that they probably have one of the more dominant backfields, as far as comp combined with Montgomery and Jahmyr Gibbs, right? So they have very good skill position, and their offensive line is very, very good, and Jared Goff is the X factor. If he's hot, they're hot. If he has his interceptions, he, like you said, he could be streaky. The one weakness on that team is their defense. Their defense isn't a championship level defense, and I think that's going to be their downfall. I mean, they're the type of team that wants to outscore teams. In the playoffs, the championship teams are the ones that have the defense that goes along with that offense, and they don't have it. The Lions might get there eventually, but that's their downfall. That's what they don't have. And that's where, the Ravens, the Niners, the Chiefs have a championship level defense, believe it or not, right? We always thought they were more of an offensive team. Their defense is really, really good. So those 3 teams right there are the teams that have the championship level defenses. And in my opinion, it's going to come down, as long as there's no mistakes, I think it's going to be the Niners and the Ravens in the Super Bowl.
Right. You know, what you're referring to is their secondary. They had one of the league's worst secondaries.
In general, their defense. Yeah.
Which is, oh, no, their run defense isn't too bad. But it's their secondary, Eddie. It's horrific. That's why they have a lot of high scoring games, you know, with a win, you know, against subpar teams. And you're right. I think they are a year away. They face the Niners. In San Francisco, one note on the Niners, they better figure out how to protect Brock Purdy because he was harassed and hurried all day long. I mean, as soon as he hit hike, he dropped back. It was like I was shocked. Actually, I was impressed with his fortitude and his backbone because most quarterbacks, how close those defenders were, would be running out of the pocket. But Purdy stood strong in that pocket because I have never seen a rush. I've never seen players get to the quarterback that quickly without actually sacking him, you know. So I'm like, y'all playing with some borrowed time. If they can't figure that out, I don't see them beating the Ravens if they make it to the Super Bowl. But you're right, the Lions face the Niners, should be a good game. The final game, which I thought was the most exciting one this week, was Kansas City overcomes the Bills' stupidity. Look, people don't realize this, but every year that Patrick Mahomes has been a starter, he's made it to the conference championship. You know, the Bills have lost to the Chiefs for three out of the last 4 years in the playoffs, conference game in 2020, division round in 2021, and this past year. And what you said is key. Mahomes did not win this game for the Chiefs. This was a complete team effort that won this game. You know, the Bills – The Chiefs defense did not allow any big plays from the Bills. You know, if I remember correctly, there was where's it at? The Chiefs had 8 plays over 20 yards. The Bills had 0. You know, and that's a stunner. Yeah. So the middle was open for Kelce all day. So Kelce and the Mahomes connection was happening, but running back Isaiah Pacheco was the difference maker. 15 times he carried the ball, 97 yards rushing, 1 TD, 6.47 yards per carry. He had over 100 yards from scrimmage. His receiving was 1 catch, 14 yards off of 1 target. Kelce went 5 for 75 with 2 TDs on only 6 targets. The play calling and execution were horrible from the Bills' perspective. And the reason I say horrible, they lost. And they had no plays over 20 yards. Allen went 26 of 39 for 186 yards, 1 touchdown, no interceptions. However, he went 12 for 72 with 2 yards rushing. They relied on him too much to run the ball and not enough in the passing game. And Allen was part of the failure. For some reason, he wouldn't take what was given. If you saw the last drive, he had players open underneath, but he kept wanting to go deep. He wanted that home run. That's immaturity. That is not having a great QB coach who just gets in his face. Son, stop it. Give what they take you. So his maturity has kind of stagnated, and he needs a jumpstart. They are no longer a young team on the rise, Eddie. The Bills are a veteran team getting older now. Their window is closing. You know, I don't understand why he wouldn't take what was given. And so my point is, everybody who's going to want to blame the kicker. Oh, the kicker missed my – no. The Bills lost that game as a team. The kicker just kind of epitomized the fact that they can't beat the Chiefs. And here's what was even more depressing if you're a Bills fan. He kept trying to go deep. He kept going for the big plays that weren't there with guys open underneath. The Chiefs had their dime defense with their top players out there. So they knew what they were going to do. And Allen did not do anything to change that fact. You know, and it's horrible. And then the fake punt. Did you see the fake punt? They gave it to DeMar Hamlin. Look, you're running Allen. He's getting you 10, 12 yards a pop. You need 10 yards. It's like, what kind of fake play was that? And look, DeMar Hamlin, God bless him, he's alive and with us. He's not a very good player. Never was. You know, he's still on the roster because he's DeMar Hamlin. I mean, they're not going to cut the guy who almost died on the field of cardiac arrest. They're only – when he gets cut, it's going to be one of those quiet cuts, you know. But it's just – I just don't know. And to make it worse, Eddie, there were only 10 players on the field from the Chiefs on the fake punt. Yeah. So, Buffalo fans, cry all you want about your place kicker, Tyler Bass, missing the 44-yard field goal with 1:43 left. Yes, that is kind of was the nail in the coffin. but they lost as a team. There were two touchdowns, and then he didn't get much help. Stephon Diggs passed through the hands, would have been a touchdown. James Cook, it bounces off his hands, it would have been a touchdown. You know, so their studs didn't show up. You know, so my question to you, Eddie, has Sean McDermott taken this team as far as he can? This is very in the same situation the Cowboys were with Mike McCarthy. You know, he can't get past Kansas City. It's no longer a young and upcoming team. It's now a veteran team that's just getting older. Has his window passed him by?
I would say no. And the reason why I say no is because there was a big adjustment that they made this year that I think took them farther than they had in the past. And that is running the frickin' ball, man. They run the ball now. Whereas before, they were pass happy galore. I mean, Josh Allen, he only threw for less than 200 yards. That's unusual for Josh Allen. You know, especially in the past Buffalo Bills offensive schemes, he was always like a 300-yard passer every freaking game. You know, Stephon Diggs, where was that guy? You don't see that. I think he didn't even crack 50 yards. So what I'm saying is I don't think that their time has passed. I think they made an adjustment. They have a really good running back in James Cook. I think, you know, with some other tweaks to their offense, maybe another additional wide receiver to complement a Stephon Diggs. You know, they have Gabe Davis. I don't think he even played. But, you know,
That would use the next factor.
Right. And so that's what I'm saying. So they need another probably key position player to add to the mix to maybe open things up for Josh Allen to be able to bounce that offense a little bit more. But their running game has shown up. And I think one more year, I think we'll see how Sean McDermott does with that adjustment. And if he's not able to pass Kansas City, then I'll say his time is passed next year.
Right. I'm in agreement with you. How do you fire a coach who's done as well as he has, especially this year? I just think the offensive coordinator went to the extreme too much. He should have had more plays that utilized the middle of the field, that didn't have to go deep. And that's on the offensive coordinator and Josh Allen. Josh Allen has been in the league enough to where he should have been able to recognize it. Look, today's quarterbacks are stupid, dumb, whatever you want to call it, when you compare them to quarterbacks of yesteryear who used to call their plays. You had to really understand a defense. You really had to understand the movements, the shifts, all that, because you're the one who was calling the play. You're the one who was calling the audible. You were doing it all. Now they don't want the quarterbacks to do that. And this is when it hurts the team. When they need a quarterback, he recognized something, called that audible, called that play. So they're limited in that. And some teams, Eddie, no, you can't call an audible. Nope, sorry. Especially for the backup, because no, you run the damn play. Even if the defense has picked the perfect defense to play to counter that, they don't care. You know, so football from an intellectual level has gotten dumber with the quarterbacks. But this loss, I think, is on the team itself. I give them 1 year. Stephon Diggs, actions speak louder than me, and him refusing to talk to the press, you know, is you're just not a mature guy. You're just a crybaby. Oh, we lost it. That's what he is, you know. Grown man. He'll squash me like a bug. But he has no spine, no back. He's not a man. Man up. Talk to the press. Tell him, yeah, I dropped the ball. I screwed up or this, that, but he doesn't. It's not the first time. And players like that, to me, they're not cancers. He's not a cancer. Don't get me wrong. But he's not a leader. And what I tell you earlier this year, that team lacks leadership on the field. And that, again, team effort, why they lost. So, anyway, I'm digressing. I'm not digressing. I'm just hammering on it because it was a frustrating game. I love Patrick Mahomes, one of my favorite players. But I love Josh Allen and Poynter. I love the cornerback because of his wife, Rachel Bush. Beautiful girl, but she's a conservative, so I like her. Yeah, so I was rooting for the Bills, it wasn't meant to be. But congrats to Patrick Mahomes. I don't compare him to Tom Brady yet. He's got 2 Super Bowls. Tom Brady's got 7. Once he gets to 4 or 5, right, then I'll start comparing him. But he is right now, he is the best quarterback in the National Football League. But he's having to work for it this year. So it's going to be a great game. Real quick, again, we're running out of time here. 49ers and Rams. Before you tell me the winner, what is the key to that game?
Lions. The Lions. Say it again?
Yeah, I'm sorry. The Lions. Yeah, yeah. The 49ers and Lions. What is the key to that game for the Niners to win or the Lions? I mean, each team has a key. They're going to have to really step up. What do you see being the difference maker in this game that will determine the winner?
Man, the Niners, you know, one thing I was going to point out in that last game, for whatever reason, Kyle Shanahan, you know, he's a run-first type of coach. He's kind of moved off, he's moved away from the running game a little bit, and it's frustrating to watch because they have this difference maker in Christian McCaffrey, which, you know, you give him the ball, good things happen. I think they have to reestablish that running game and keep at it for quite some time because I think that will demoralize the Lions. I think that's the key, you know, from the offensive side for the Niners. And then for the Lions, you know, they have skill positions galore. It's going to be a dogfight for the Niner defense to be able to contain that team. So if the Niners are successful in being able to, you know, keep that team from scoring more than 21 points, I think the Niners will win. But that's the thing is that, you know, this is the biggest matchup I think the Niners have faced as far as skill position players being this fast and this talented all in one bunch. This is going to be interesting to see what happens.
I agree, Eddie, and not to defend Kyle Shanahan. I still get angry when I think of the Atlanta Falcons Patriots Super Bowl with his boneheaded, pathetic play calling in the second half. Anyway, I'm digressing now. I think the key to this game, or to push back on what you said about McCaffrey, I'm not pushing back, but he had a calf injury, so maybe that's why he wasn't used as much. But I agree with you. And it's not just about involving McCaffrey with handoffs. You know, get him out in the open. You know, the guy just makes people miss. So I agree with you. Yeah. I think the key to the game, though, is they have to have Deebo Samuels back. But if it's not raining, the weather's decent, I think the because the Lions don't have an elite defense, I think the Niners can get away with their terrible offensive line in terms of protecting. Look, it may not show in the numbers, but when the Niners play an elite defense like the Ravens, they're exposed in their pass protection. I don't think the Niners are going to have that problem this week, and so I think they should win this game. I don't want to say easily, but I will be surprised if they don't win. I think the key is the pass rush to get to Purdy. And if Deebo is out, then I'm really focusing on some blitzes and trying to rush Purdy, hurry him up. Because without Deebo, no receiver seems to want to step up and say, I'm the man. Brandon Ayuki, how do you say his last name?
Ayuk.
To me, I see a stud. It's like, dude, you got to elevate your game when Deebo's not there. And I don't know if he's there yet, but the guy made some highlight reel catches. So if Deebo's out, I'm doing a little bit of extra blitzing, the rattle Purdy, and I'm establishing my rushing attack because why? The Ravens destroyed him and just literally destroyed the Niners with the rushing attack. And the Packers, they were the better team last week. I mean, I'm glad the Niners won because I want to see them win it all. But I was sweating bullets because I'm like, the Packers are outplaying them. If not for that boneheaded mistake at the end, they could have won. And like you said, the two interception drops. The rushing attack, if I'm the Lions, I get that up and going. All right. Let's talk about the Chiefs and Ravens. Eddie, real quick from my end, I just think the Ravens are too much for the Chiefs. But any given Sunday, what's your take on this?
You know, if any team, in my opinion, that could beat the Ravens had lost again, you know, against the Chiefs, and that was the Bills. I think the Bills probably would have given them the best fight.
Yeah.
But you can't count off the Chiefs, man. You just can't. I mean, you know, they have a good defense themselves, the Chiefs. You know, I think they're going to be able to contain Lamar Jackson more than people think. The real key is going to be Patrick Mahomes solve, you know, the defensive puzzle that are the Ravens, and they, you know, no one has really solved them yet this year. And you know, if anybody could do it, Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes can. So I think that's the key. That'll be the key is Patrick Mahomes versus the Ravens D in that game. Cause I think the Chiefs will be able to contain Lamar Jackson, and that's what makes this game very interesting.
If the Chiefs contain Lamar Jackson, they're going to win. The whole key is containing Lamar Jackson. What you have to do is you have to remove his passing lanes, and what Lamar Jackson is learning how to do is look for the receiver. The downside is you start to look for that receiver with mobility, is bad, you know, you're not in good form when you're throwing the ball, you know. So if they can contain him, force him into some bad throws, possible interceptions, because that defense is playing lights out right now. Patrick Mahomes cannot be contained. The receivers on the Chiefs contain Patrick Mahomes by dropping the ball. If the receivers come to play for the Chiefs, then it could be a very high-scoring game. But the winner of this game is going to come down to if they can contain Lamar Jackson. And because Lamar Jackson is the key to the rushing attack. When you start focusing too much on Lamar Jackson, the rushing attack, they start beating you down with that. With the Chiefs, they've got to make sure the drops don't happen, and Mahomes has got to be ready to read the field properly. But again, there's no better quarterback in the National Football League than Patrick Mahomes. And if anybody can counter the Ravens, it's going to be him. I still think the Ravens win. I just don't think the Chiefs – let's say they were like 10 their first Super Bowl, 8 their second Super Bowl. They're about a team that's at 6 or 7 now. And their win-loss record shows that. And I'm not denigrating them. I'm just saying they've come back down to earth. Where the Ravens, I'd say right now, are about an 8. And they're moving up. You know, so that's who I see as the winner. Eddie, any final comments in terms of the NFL playoffs or next week's games?
Nope, I already said it, man. It's going to be the Niners versus the Ravens. Bottom line.
There you go. In fact, that's my prediction, too. I'd rather see the Niners versus the Chiefs, but I'm sick of Patrick Mahomes winning so much. I'm kidding. Him and Andy Reid, I had no issues with winning. And God bless Lamar Jackson. He is proving – he's not proving me wrong. He's actually doing what I keep saying a quarterback needs to do as they mature, learn how to become pocket passers, use their mobility to open it up. He's doing that at a level, though, we have not seen in many players. And with that, my friends, there you have it. Our Points on the Board podcast covering basketball and football. Do not forget, you can check us out at grumblingsmedia.com. You can check us out at YouTube and Rumble under the profile Grumblings Media, as well as our traditional podcast outlets, Spotify, Pandora, Google, and Apple. Mr. Aparicio, and to America, until next time, we bid you adieu.